Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Engaging Internal Comms, the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with new ideas and innovations in our profession. Hello, my name's Craig Smith from the Big Picture People. I hope you've had a chance to listen to the first 5 episodes of Engaging Internal Comms. If you haven't, you can engage with them at our website, which is engagingic.com, or via your favourite podcast platform, iTunes, etc. We also have a Facebook page and group, which if you've not already discovered it, the page is Engaging IC, which you can get via Facebook, and the group, which is a private group. If you want to join that, you can join that via our website, again, engagingic.com. We do have a mailing list as well. If you'd like to join that, you can join it via our website, and we will keep you up to date with what is coming up in the shows. We'll let you know when the shows are released every week, but also give you a sneak preview of what's coming up next week. Next week's a really good show if you're interested in digital and how you can get the most out of a digital platform. That's all I'm going to say about that. So if you want to find out all about you, how to get the best out of your digital comms, I strongly recommend you listen to next week's show. Anyway, on to today's interview. So the interview for this show has a very strong emphasis around learning and development, but I still think it's a highly relevant topic for engagers and internal communicators to think about, because the behavior change that we're going to be talking about in today's interview strongly relates to anything we're trying to do when we're trying to communicate to people in our organizations or we're embarking upon any employee engagement process. So hope you find the interview useful and that the context of it is relevant to your work around your own internal comms and your own employee engagement work. So here it is. So today I'm going to be talking to Jamie Thompson. Jamie is an experiential learning specialist and also managing director at MTA Learning. Jamie's also leader in residence at Leeds University Business School. And going way back into his career, Jamie also used to work for Deloitte for 3 years as a consultant. So hello, Jamie, how are you?
Very well, thank you, Craig. How are you?
Very good, thank you. And remind me, you're in North Yorkshire. Whereabouts in North Yorkshire are you exactly? I know I've been down to you, but whereabouts are you?
Yeah, that's right. Just outside Wetherby, in a lovely little place called Boston Spa.
That's fantastic. That's right. Yeah, and we've just been talking about the weather. So I know it's maybe not as blustery as where you are, but as I said up here, we've got a very, very strong wind. So hopefully there'll be no crashes or bangs in the background. But I've managed to tether everything down outside. So yeah, weather's a bit more placid down your way by the sounds of it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty nice down here actually. I can see out the window the MTA bees are enjoying it and busy collecting honey. So yeah, pretty good to be honest.
Fantastic. MTA bees. I'll have to tell me a bit more about those later on. So, so Jamie, you and I have known each other for a number of years. I've been a customer of your business, and I originally started using your materials way back, frighteningly, probably about 20 years ago when I worked at PepsiCo. And we've also collaborated on a number of projects through our business. So good friends business wise of the business. Our businesses are good friends of each other. So just tell us a little bit more about MTA Learning and the type of work that you do and the type of solutions that you provide to your clients.
Yeah, sure. So at MTA, we're guided by this belief that instead of seeing learners as being empty vessels, they're all the unique individuals with huge learning potential. And so what we aim to do is create these wonderfully rich learning experiences for people. So we create the right conditions, pour on water, add the nutrients, as it were, and watch people grow. And we do that by designing and supplying the out-of-the-box experiential learning kits. So trainers and facilitators can come to us and grab a kit, and it's got leadership activities in, teamworking activities in, communication activities. Anything really which is going to help people develop all the soft skills that are going to enable them to succeed. And in terms of the kind of people we've worked with, the great thing about people is that they're people. And so we've worked in prisons, schools, suited banks on Wall Street, tech companies in California. Wherever there's people, we can help.
Fantastic. And yeah, and I mean, you, again, just to kind of reiterate, I guess, you know, the kits that we've seen you know, we've used from yours, it is everything in a bag. It's everything in a box. It's everything you need in order to do all that sort of stuff that you've just been talking about there. So, I know your MTA Learning and that's the sort of name of your company, but I guess the danger is, because I can vouch from experience having a company with learning in the title, is that people just kind of box you into a corner sometimes and just think you're a training company. And I think the sort of thing you do has a really strong behavior change element to it. And it, you know, in some respects, I would sort of describe you as a consultancy or, you know, in terms of a organizational development provider. So tell us a little bit more about that side of things that aren't just related to training, because I think you would probably agree you know, what you do is more than training, I guess. Yeah.
I would hope so. So for me, training conjures up this analogy of the empty vessel. And as experts, we sit at the front of the room, we fill up these empty vessels in the way which we want to. I'd use a term like you have. So maybe a development company or a consultancy. And really, this deep belief that the people in the room are the experts, and if we can get them to take ownership of their own learning, their own behavior, help them understand for themselves what's working, what's not working, get them cognitively involved in what's happening in the room, and get the feedback from us on how they're performing, then that's going to have a real impact. It's going to have a lasting impact. And it's going to be much more relevant to their own workplace. Yeah, no,
absolutely. So, I mean, I guess what might be helpful just for people listening in is, and again, it's very difficult to kind of describe a typical exercise, because all your stuff is really, you know, unique and has many different applications. So just trying to paint a picture for our kind of listeners who've maybe not seen one of your sets of materials before. Just try and explain, you know, how an exercise might work and what sort of components and what sort of elements are involved in that. And I know you do have a kind of a not a standard process, but you have a process that you're taking people through as a learning journey or as a communications exercise when you're using one of your sort of sets of materials. So could you just talk us through how that might, you know, paint that picture for our listeners as how that works?
Yeah, sure. So let's take a topic which is always popular, and it could be creating a high performing team and helping people develop the skills and behaviors that are going to enable a team to perform to the best of its ability. So in that sense, we'd be looking at helping people be more sensitive to others' needs. We'd be looking at people to fail fast, take risks. We would be hoping that people would be able to set objectives and recognize very, very quickly what they need to do to be effective. So what we might do is we might get people sit around in a circle. They might have some plastic components in front of them. We'll give them a task. The task is quite easy to complete individually, but to be really effective, you need to swap and change components with other people. And what a really high performing team is going to be able to do, they're going to be able to keep their heads up. They're going to be able to look at the other people in their team. They will be able to recognize what that person needs. They'll be able to pass things around quickly. And so we're starting to help the team develop and practice all the skills that they're going to be able to take back to their workplace and apply straight away. But of course, the actual activity is not the most important bit. The important bit is the bit afterwards, and that's when people can discuss what happened, what worked well, what didn't go well, and work out how they can take their learning back into the workplace.
Yeah. Okay. So really, really strong, as I said earlier, really strong behavioral sort of change, aha moment in terms of reflecting on how does that parallel with some of the behaviors that we see in the workplace, that sort of thing. Okay. So, I mean, one of the things we talked about in the lead up to this interview is that there, you know, there is a massive commonality between our two businesses. You know, the Big Picture People, what we do is bespoke, physical, physical learning tools that and communication tools that very much around people being physically in the same place together. And your products in that respect are very similar, as you know, in the example that you've just given there. So what is it about not just the experiential side, because I guess you can have online experiential learning, but the physical experiential learning that makes it, for you anyway, a powerful way of communicating, a powerful way of helping people to learn and to understand what it is we're trying to, you know, get into their heads, what we're trying to get them to think about?
Yeah, sure. So it's a range of factors. For me, the first one is engagement. So Just look how desperate people are at the moment to get out and meet up again, to have those social interactions. So people like being together. People enjoy it. And so if you can get people together in a room, you've won half the battle. People are there and it's very motivating. So people are cognitively engaged. And for me, one of the huge second piece is one of the huge things about effective learning, it's often overlooked, is this notion of social learning. So we learn from how other people are behaving, and that's often very, very, very subtle. Think about how we learn to do our jobs. We learn from others in the workplace. Children learn from their peers, from their parents. And so when we're face-to-face, social learning plays a huge part in the overall efficacy of the outcomes. And I think so much of that is lost online. Because to do this social learning, you need bandwidth. You need to get a full picture of what's happening in the room. You need to be able to pick up the subtle clues of how your behavior is impacting people who aren't talking, who the impact of your physicality on what people are doing. And then really, we learn so much as well through the incidental conversations around the learning. So at lunch, at coffee, afterwards in the bar. It's those deeper one-to-ones, the small breakouts we have when we go off into a corner and have a quiet moment and a quick chat with someone else, and they give us a really nice piece of feedback. I think that's when we really learn, and this just can't happen, or it doesn't happen at the moment online. And then there's the technical problems online as well. So the latency. People, if we're having difficult conversations, we need to be able to respond quickly. We need to have a full picture of how people are feeling. And so powerful learning is an emotional process, and learning can be painful as well. And to manage all that and do it effectively online, I think is as yet not possible with the technology available. So we have so much more potential when we're face to face to increase the power and increase the efficacy of learning, particularly for more difficult, more emotionally charged subjects, which is what we're all about.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I totally agree with you, because I mean, I was talking to a client this morning and we're developing a product for them, which I mean, we'll talk about a little bit about this in a minute, but obviously in the middle at the moment where it's getting people back together is going to be challenging. And what they've realized is that the game that goes down to what you've just been saying there about the sort of social learning element of it and the social communication element of it, and the fact that it requires people to open up, it requires a level of authenticity. It requires people to acknowledge maybe things that they've been doing in the past that haven't been necessarily not the right things, but maybe there are better ways they could have approached things in the past. And I think that degree of authenticity and openness is more challenging online, and where you can't use your body language, you can't give people reassurance as well. I think it does make that more challenging. But I think, yeah, the point around social learning, and I think, again, just kind of, you know, the audience of this podcast is people who are very much into employee engagement and internal communications. I think is equally applicable to any communication or any employee engagement activity, that there is a strong social learning element of it. It's not just about transmitting a message. We want people to internalize it, but also normalize it with the people around them, because they're the people who are going to be, you know, either the beneficiaries or are people who are going to be, you know, reacting to this. So no, I think the social learning thing for me. So I mean, I know you've done studies around social learning, I know it's a very strong component. Is there anything else around social learning that again, would be applicable in a, not necessarily in a training environment, but in a kind of a communications or a normalization of a kind of maybe a change of behaviors that we're trying to get out to a group of people? What other aspects of social learning do you think we need to be thinking about as well?
Sure. Well, I think really just picking up on your point about normalization and how do people normalize things? Well, they often process it with other people. And one of the wonderful things that happens when we're face to face is we can see and feel and sense how people are feeling about things. And we can process things with each other. And that can be, and often is, as subtle as just having a quiet word to somebody or recognizing that somebody wants to talk. And how can you possibly do that online? That there's no kind of hiding place if we're all together. So I think it's about providing the space, time, opportunity for people to internalize and to use your phrase, normalize, because if things aren't normalized, that they're not applied, and ultimately we need to make an impact. And getting people together ultimately enables businesses to make a bigger impact, or training communication to make a bigger impact.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess at the time of recording, Jamie, we were recording this spring to 2020, an era that will go down in infamy, to paraphrase Roosevelt. We're hearing at the moment that work has changed. Every article, I was reading a BBC article today about, the fact that now most people are going to be working from home is the anticipation going forward. And we're hearing that, learning and development, comms, all of these things are going to be predominantly done online now with people working either in remote or semi-remote teams. Where does that leave people like us and our advocates within our client organizations who really do see that the kind of this style of learning, this social learning and social communication and face-to-face experiences being pivotal to real behavior change? Where does that leave us, do you think, in this new landscape, without being too kind of crystal ball-y and trying to read the future? Yeah. What were your thoughts on that, Jamie?
Well, yeah, I think it's fascinating, Craig, because I'm hearing and seeing the same thing, that work's changed and learning is going to be remote. But I think this is, in many ways, through our lenses. So I see this on LinkedIn, and I see journalists writing this on the BBC. And of course, this is predominantly a professional services environment. And so actually for me and the people I've been talking to, the reality is that there are still many, many organizations outside of perhaps the bubble that I think I'm aware I might operate in, which are still going to thrive on face-to-face. So I was chatting to the Navy a week or so ago, and of course, they are still going to be on board ship and they're not going to be social distancing.
Yeah.
The fire service are very keen to really get on board with experiential learning, because you can't rescue somebody from a car remotely.
No.
Schools, remote learning does not work for students, and it's not efficient either. We need to pull young people together, and again, the social learning component is so important. Tourism, hospitality, youth groups, and of course our wonderful NHS. So yeah. I think aspects of learning will change, but I think there are going to be many areas that are still going to really benefit from experiential learning and face-to-face interactions. But even if we do accept that the workplace has changed, then we're still going to need to bring people together. We've been doing some work for a fintech company, and they're an amazing organization. 75% of their workforce work remotely. But the power of bringing people together to build relationships, to have powerful face-to-face discussions, really is second to none. So I think for me, it's about making sure that when we do bring those people together, we're not duplicating what can be done online, so that the PowerPoints or the formal learning, but we're making sure it's very high quality human interactions that people value, that build cohesiveness and bring people together. So I'd say a flight to quality, I hope, in terms of experiential learning.
Yeah, yeah, and I think you use two interesting points there, which is yes, that I think you're right. I think that the everybody assumes that everybody works in you know high rise. Everybody works on a PC, does all their work every day on a PC, and can you know easily take that work and do it from home. Which we you know I think from a managerial level, there's a lot of people who can do that. But you know, I fell foul of this early in this whole saga when. You know, I kind of reached out to someone who, you know, worked in a supermarket without really thinking about it and thinking, actually, of course, you know, your people are all working, you know, they're all in a physical space together. Okay. They're having to sort of follow some sort of social distancing, but, and you're right. There are many industries, professions, areas of life, which we kind of, you know, we will never be able to work remotely because of the nature of the work. But I think the interest, you know, so I think that's absolutely, you're right there. I think the other thing is as you say, is that even where it is feasible, so, you know, where we're all maybe knowledge workers, we can all work from a PC, we can all work from a laptop at home, is that there is still, there will still be times when we need to get those people together, and we will have opportunity to get those people together, and we need to make sure that we don't squander those opportunities and really make it count. And that means, as you say, I think the way you put that there was spot on, which is let's not use that as something, the analogy I would use is a bit like when you get people in together for a team meeting and all they do is just sort of do loads of updates and kind of sharing of like information of what's happened since the last meeting. When you think, well, we could have done that. You could have just sent me something to read through and I could have, you know, let's use this time in the room together to, you know, help each other to explore a problem that we've been struggling with, and collectively let's help you resolve that, you know, like almost like an action learning approach. Is that I've always advocated that with clients, don't, you know, your face-to-face time is your premium, you know, it's your gold-plated opportunity to spend some time together and really work together. Don't use it just for kind of, oh, let's do a kind of update through the, you know, the spreadsheet on the PowerPoint or whatever. And you know, so I totally agree with you. And I think from an organizational perspective, I think that, you know, people like us and what we do and other people who do the kind of really making the most of those face-to-face opportunities, whether it's conferences or, you know, meetings or that sort of thing, really need to think about how we optimize that time if it's going to be in short supply in the future. How do we make the case then? Because I think, you know, we are hearing a lot of this, as we've just talked about, lots of this, you know, the era of Zoom and MS Teams and all of that stuff is now upon us. You know, how would we make that case to say, yeah, I think we were kind of expanding on what we've just been talking about, making sure that people realize that it's as relevant and as valuable as ever, and it will be something that will be relevant in the future. What would your kind of elevator pitch be on that then, Jamie?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, I'm, as a reflecting back on what I was saying earlier, I'm not a big one for telling people what to do. But what I do is I'd say to people, well, look, why are we doing remote learning? Who is it going to benefit? And one of the really interesting things that's been coming out of the COVID-19 crisis is people's views on what's important. And for me, it's been wonderful to see that actually people are now starting to prioritize quality of life metrics over purely economic metrics. And so why are we doing remote learning? Economically, yes, there are clear economic benefits to it. But from a human quality of life, holistic point of view, for addressing our needs as humans, then I don't think you can ever do anything which is as valuable, as pertinent, as healthy for people as getting people together in the room. So, clearly there are times when it's useful to do remote learning, particularly when it's formal type of tick box learning, which does need to happen. But let's, as employers, let's do what's best for the employees, and wherever possible, make their learning experiences as holistic as possible. People are, I know so many people that are struggling with lockdown. Let's use the time we have for learning to get people back together and help them with that kind of basic need for human, really good quality human interaction, which is going to help them be more resilient and deal with all the challenges that kind of we're going to face over the next few years.
Yeah, I totally agree. How do you see the arena evolving over the next, you know, I'm talking about the arena as if it's one kind of homogeneous, you know, collection. It's obviously lots of different people who approach this whole face-to-face interaction. I mean, how do you see it changing over the, do you see it changing with what we've been talking about? Do you see an evolution there? And I don't know, maybe some semi hybrid approaches to face-to-face. What are some of the innovations that you would anticipate in this area?
Yeah, sure. So I think we'll definitely see some elements of experiential learning going online, and that's something we're thinking about at the moment. But I think it's going to be a quiet few months for people that work in face-to-face experiential learning. Mm-hmm. But we will get back to some form of status quo where people are coming together regularly to learn and to interact and really want to make the most of it. So I think we'll perhaps see technology not necessarily replace face-to-face learning, but perhaps enable face-to-face learning to be more effective. So in my world, that could be about using technology to deconstruct what's going on within a team when they're working together face to face. It could be about using technology to make debriefing more effective and quicker. So what I would like to see, what I'm working on, is not replacing face to face learning, but making helping face-to-face learning evolve so it's more effective, more efficient, and can help people in this perhaps new reality. So yeah, I'm really positive about the future of experiential learning. I think there's always going to be a place for face-to-face learning, and if face-to-face learning doesn't happen, I think we need to be asking ourselves some serious questions about why and who is that benefiting.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's fantastic. So thank you, Jamie. So normally what I do in the interview is just ask, you know, it's a strange question to ask because unless anyone knows you who's listening in, they won't, everything you've said today will be unknown to them. But I guess is, you know, what's one thing that we don't know about you, I don't know about you, something that people who generally know you quite well don't know about you? Have you got a sort of any sort of surprise little stories or hobbies or something that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Wow, well, I've got stacks of hobbies, and I've already mentioned the MTABs. But yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that I don't know is it's not something people don't necessarily know about me, but it's just a something which really struck me over the kind of COVID-19 crisis, and that's I think perhaps a real change in my values, and it goes back to what I was saying about the importance of face-to-face learning. And you know, when I started Deloitte all those years ago, for me it was very much about work, about efficiency, about the bottom line. And for me, this crisis has just really crystallized and perhaps even got me to question my values about what's important. And so in terms of kind of changing my philosophy now, it really is about the importance of making sure that learning is addressing that kind of wider aspect of what humans need, and not just the bottom line. So, and then people who know me, that might be a surprise, being a, you know, kind of ex accountant, and yeah, very, very much kind of driven by process improvement. So yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. So how can we find out more about you, Jamie, and MTA Learning? Where would you like people to look or find out more about your business and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So we've got a website, experientiallearning.org. There's stacks of free information, free resources on there that can help you deliver experiential learning, and also places to buy the kits as well. When things are back in business, come on a masterclass, spend a couple of days with me playing with experiential learning tools, meeting other trainers and facilitators, and together we can work out how experiential learning works in the new normal, whatever that will be.
Brilliant. Yeah, no, definitely. I definitely vouch for your experiential, your workshops. They're a very good way of immersing yourself in what you do, and also meeting some really interesting people as well. So, and in terms of personal contact, LinkedIn, I know you're on LinkedIn. People, you're happy for people to reach out, connect to you via LinkedIn?
Absolutely. Yeah. Connect with me on LinkedIn. Give me a call. More than happy to chat.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, well, thank you very much, Jamie. Lovely to speak to you again, and all the very best for the future.
Thanks, Craig. Yeah, take care and enjoy your bike ride later on.
Thank you very much. So thank you very much for listening to Engaging Internal Comms. We hope you found this episode useful and interesting. We'd love to get your thoughts about the show and any questions you have or ideas for topics that you'd like to maybe cover in future episodes. You can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can get in touch with us via the contact form at engagingic.com. You can also sign up for our mailing list there, and we'll send you relevant news about the show, future episodes, and we'll also let you know about anything interesting we found out about internal communications and employee engagement. If you like the show and you haven't already done so, please subscribe to it via your podcast service. And you can also subscribe via the links on our podcast page, which again is engagingic.com. If you like the show, we'd be really grateful if you could leave us a review. And if you know anyone else who might be interested in the show or might benefit from it, please let them know. Please share it with them and share them the links to the show and engagingic.com. Thank you very much. Thank you.